mostly bored-looking tourists, but some of the stallholders were moving round to get a better view, too. "Come on, let's get on with this," Sparks muttered, anxious to get away from the audience. He was already sweating in his suit. Nicole Ratner was taking her first videos and led the way. Sparks moved through the ruins behind her, getting the measure of it all in his head. He didn't speak until he'd walked right round the site. It was his way. He picked a route through the debris on the ground floor, locating himself and fighting the urge to scream with frustration. He was amazed, no, horrified, at how much potential evidence had been left lying around for weeks, for scavenging dogs and passing opportunists to pick at. Bottles were still rolling around beneath the heat-twisted bedframes in the dorm. Charred belongings, a melted phone, a bracelet, unidentifiable bits of plastic and metal, floated on the sea of ash, probably just lying where they had last been flung. The Thai police had originally said a candle knocked over at a party was responsible for the fire, but it looked to Sparks as if the fire had started at the back of the building, at the end of a corridor. Funny place to have a party, he thought, and if a candle fell over on this concrete floor, it would just go out. You'd need something else to keep it going. He traced the scorch marks along the walls to what must have been a door. There was nothing left of it now, just a gaping hole. He'd lay odds that the fire was started here, against the door. Was it started deliberately? To stop people going out? Or coming in? Or to stop people seeing what had happened beyond it? The doorway led into a small courtyard, hemmed in on all sides by blank neighbouring walls, and littered with blackened gas bottles and puddles of melted red plastic. The cold store, where the bodies had been found 4 weeks earlier, filled one corner. It looked homemade. It was basically a big metal box, dented, patched and rusting where the edges met. The seal on the door was perished, and ash blanketed an external air conditioning unit. He wondered how the hell someone had managed to get it into the courtyard in the first place. Must have been built on the spot. Inside the metal box, the drinks crates were still in one piece, stacked against a wall, the bottles clinking when he stepped onto the uneven floor. It stank of rotting food and rat shit, and Sparks put his hand over his mask to double-bag his breath. It was only when he turned to come out that he saw the coconut matting heaped in the deep shadow by the door. The same spot, he guessed, where it had been thrown to one side by the officers who had uncovered the bodies. "We need that," he said to Jason, who joined him in the claustrophobic space. "Okay, boss," Jason said. "Nicole is photographing everything before I start sifting." Sparks found a patch of shade at the front of the building and drew a rough floor plan in his notebook. He made his notes meticulously. It was important, more so these days when he could become distracted so easily. He was thinking about the distance from the dorm to the spot where the girls were discovered when Salmond found him. "All right, sir," she said, pulling off her gloves and hood. "Yes, well, apart from the fact that this crime scene is a bloody disgrace. Has Jason got the bottles from the dorm?"
"Yes, all bagged up and labelled. There are fingerprints everywhere, of course, but he's concentrating on the cold store. He says there's a lovely handprint inside near the door."
"Probably the police or souvenir hunters. But we need everything."
"I don't think they were killed in the cold store, do you, boss? It's very confined. I can only just stand up straight in there. And he'd have had to kill one girl while the other one did nothing."
Sparks nodded. "There were no marks on the bodies to suggest restraints. But they may not have been killed at the same time, of course. I think they must have died in the building, though. The only access to that courtyard is through the guest house, and the street outside is never empty. Look around. This must go on 24 hours a day with the number of all-night clubs and bars in the area. Carting about two dead bodies might have been noticed. Even here."
"My bet is the dorm," Salmond said,
and screwing a bottle of water.
Could have been a sex game that went wrong. Autoerotic asphyxiation, like that MP with the Satsuma.
Satsuma?
Might have been a clementine.
Right, well, let's not worry about which small citrus fruit it was. Blimey, Zara, is this jet lag kicking in? Salmond grinned.
A bit.
Who was the last person to see them alive?
The people at the party, according to the Thai police. Except there don't seem to have been any. The only other people staying at the guest house were the two Dutch lads, Jake Waters and Jamie Lawrence. Lars and Diederik left on the 11th, and Lawrence was in prison that night, according to the cops.
We need to go and see him to find out what he knows as soon as possible, and to get his prints. Trying to get forensic material out of the Bangkok lot is a waste of time.
Sparks looked at his notes again.
We only have the police's word that the girls were alive that night. They could have been murdered and hidden days before. Aoife couldn't give more than a loose guide to when they died because of the uncertainty about the temperature in the cold store. When was Mags's last email from Alex?
Salmond pulled out her phone and scrolled silently.
August the 12th, she announced. The night Alex caught Rosie stealing from her bag.
So they could have died at any time during the 72 hours before the fire.
Yep.
Sparks's phone rang. A local number.
Hello, Detective Inspector Bob Sparks, he announced.
Two Thai officers, the more senior with faltering English, arrived half an hour later. They smiled broadly during the greetings and led the way into the guest house to point out areas they had examined. They had obviously been told they were there to instruct the British officers in how to conduct an investigation.
I understand you believe a candle may have started the fire, Sparks said with a smile.
He was catching on.
Why do you think it was a candle that started it? Did a witness say there was one?
The owner, the officer said. She said many parties here. People drunk. They light candles. Candle knocked over.
He made to leave, his work done.
When did you speak to the owner? I thought she'd disappeared, Sparks said.
Soon after the fire. She was very helpful.
But I understand you have not found any other witnesses.
Just owner. She lost everything in the fire. It was the fault of the foreigners who died.
Except the autopsy in England showed one girl had been murdered. Strangled, Sparks insisted, casually blocking the doorway to keep the officers there. We sent you the report.
The two Thais talked between themselves for a moment.
The case is closed. We have duties. We must go, the senior officer said.
Thank you very much for showing us how you work, Sparks said, trying to keep sarcasm at bay. Could we have a copy of your report? It would be so helpful.
Not possible. Sorry.
And they were gone.
The team reassembled in the cafe at the end of the alley. We need to speak to the owner urgently, Sparks said.
She was there.
Ask the neighbours. They must know where she is. And I'll ask the embassy to get us in to see Jamie Lawrence.
Then we'll go home.
Chapter 57. Friday, the 12th of September, 2014. The Reporter. The decision to come had not been hard, really. I was chasing down every line in this story to find out the truth of what happened, the truth of my son's part in it. And Jamie Lawrence seemed to be the only person alive who might know. Apart from you, Jake, I tell myself. But you're not here, and I've got to know what I'm protecting you from. I explained all this to Steve as soon as I'd heard that Jamie was in prison in Bangkok. He'd taken it all in as he helped himself to chicken danzak from the foil container that was sitting in a pool of red oil on the table.
So why have you got to go? Why can't you wait for your friend D.I. Sparks to see him and report back?
He mumbled. Because I have questions I want to ask him. He may not want to talk to the police.
But he'll want to talk to you.
Steve arched an eyebrow and drank his beer. I'll get him on side, Steve. I'll persuade him.
I'm sure you will, Katie. No one is resistant to your charms, are they?
I pushed my plate away. Don't get nasty with me. You're exhausted, I get that. So am I. But I have to find out what he knows. You must understand that.
Steve didn't respond. He took another mouthful of curry.
Don't you? I said louder. This boy could be the key to everything.
Actually, Jake is the key to everything. Shouldn't you be pouring your energies into finding him? This other boy has already been ruled out of the investigation by the police. He wasn't there. This is just displacement therapy, Katie. An expensive distraction. It'll cost a fortune for you to go. And you might end up not even getting in to see him.
That's not fair. I've tried everything I can think of to find Jake.
I had. I'd tracked down his friends from school, from university, even the treacherous girlfriend, speaking calmly while corrosive desperation built in my stomach. I'd rung boys he used to play football with on a Saturday, visited pubs he used to drink in, libraries he'd studied in, cafes, shops he'd used, but nothing. No one had seen or heard from him.
Anyway, I'll get in. I've got into harder places than that.
A wildlife park after hours to find a chained-up elephant and a Midnight Express-style prison in Bulgaria sprang to mind. And I've got some money tucked away.
Our holiday money, you mean?
Whatever. This is important. I'm going.
He speared another piece of chicken and chewed on. And here I am. Groundhog Day in Bangkok, watching the same high-rises blur together from the speeding taxi. Don is already on the job for me. I'm having to pay him out of my own pocket, but he's worth his weight in gold. If anyone can help me get into the remand prison, it's him. We meet at the same cafe at the end of the alley, and I automatically look for Ross at the surrounding tables. He's not there, so I turn back to Don and try to concentrate on what he's telling me.
I can get you into Klong Prem prison this afternoon. It didn't cost much, but you can only have 30 minutes with the prisoner.
Genius, Don. Will you come with me, in case I need an interpreter?
Sure.
It's bloody Kate Waters!
A woman's voice rises above the hubbub of the cafe. I swing round in my chair. D.S. Sara Salmond is sitting two rows back, and not sitting any more. She's striding between the tables, a woman on a mission, as the two people with her watch in astonishment.
What on earth are you doing here?
D.S. Salmond calls over customers' heads, unable to wait until she arrives tableside.
Hello, I say. Just following up a story.
Really? Wait until the boss hears you're here.
I twist round, but can't see Bob Sparks.
Is he here?
You bet. He's making a call round the corner.
I get up quickly. I want to talk to him on my own, not with an audience of nosy tourists and shouty police officers. We almost bump into each other as I round the corner into the alley. He's got his phone in his hand and is in another world.
Bob,
I say, making him jump. I keep walking, steering him back the way he's come, so we are standing in shadows.
Kate, what the hell are you doing here?
Your sergeant just shouted the same question at me. I'm here for the story, of course.
What story? I thought you'd handed over to Joe Jackson. You're supposed to be on compassionate leave.
Well, I like to keep busy, and Joe is doing something else at the moment. How are you doing? How have you got on with the Thai police?
Let's just say we're doing our own thing. Our team is working the crime scene and trying to track down the owner. The police are now saying she's a witness.
Really? I might be able to help with that. I'm meeting one of Jake's friends later. He might know where we can find her.
Right,
he says, looking pained.
We could go together. Have a quiet chat with him?
I say, slipping back into our normal working relationship.
Not really, Kate,
he says, bringing me back to reality.
I appreciate the offer, but we're looking for your son in connection with a murder inquiry.
Sorry. Stupid of me.
Anyway, what were you hoping to find here? Jake is in the UK. Shouldn't you be there for when he turns up?
Christ, you sound like my husband.
Sparks smiles.
He has my every sympathy.
I burble on. I don't want him to know about the prison visit. He might try to stop me.
This is where whatever happened happened. I need to find out the truth, Bob, for Jake's sake. And I can't sit around waiting, It's like an itch that I have to scratch.
Oh, I know,
he says. He does. We're cut from the same cloth. I've got to get on, I say. Time's cracking on.
Where are you going next?
To see a man about a dog, I say. How about you?
Same,
he says, and winks. Chapter 58. Friday the 12th of September, 2014. The Reporter. The queues at Klong Prem Prison were long, and I chewed at my nails, wondering if we would get in before visiting ended. Don's contact had given him Jamie Lawrence's full ID and building number, and he'd assured me we could just turn up. There were dozens of rules for visitors. No books or magazines with pictures of women, clothed or otherwise. No money, no food items. We could, however, pay for toiletries and food, including, bizarrely, KFC meals, and get them delivered by the prison service. Is that extra punishment? I tried to joke.
The daily menu inside is rice and fish heads, Don said. He'll be grateful for whatever we send in.
I hope he's not a vegetarian, I said to Don, as I handed over the money for a bucket of fried chicken, toothpaste and soap.
Don't worry. He can use any of this as prison currency if he doesn't want it.
We moved through the system slowly, showing passports, being searched, filling in forms in echoing halls, and following signs to the visitor's room. Eventually, we sat on a bench and waited for our turn to be called. A sudden flood of people into the room signals the end of the previous visit, and I ready myself. I know what I want to ask, what I hope he'll tell me, what I hope he won't. Names are being called, and visitors are jumping up and running to the cubicle they've been allocated. Don suddenly stands.
That's us,
he says. I haven't heard my name, or anything approximating it. But he grabs my arm and says,
We can't hang about. We haven't got long. It's the booth right at the end.
We walk fast, past the others already perched on our side of the security grill, and leaning hard towards their loved ones. The noise is deafening as dozens of voices compete with each other and bounce round the walls. There's one high stool and a plastic telephone receiver in our half of the booth. I sit down and peer through two metal grills, 1 inch from my face, the other 3 feet away across a no-man's land, where a figure sits with his phone to his ear. I screw my eyes up to get a better look. He's Thai, I say to Don, and he puts his face against the grill to check. I pick up the phone and say, Jamie? The man says something I don't understand. It's not him, I shout at Don. Have we got the right booth? Oh God, we're losing time. He marches over to a guard at the desk behind us and returns.
Right place, wrong prisoner. He was here for the last visit. Our bloke is being brought now.
I clean the telephone receiver with a wet wipe, then the grill as the Thai prisoner is escorted away, and our man comes in. I sit looking, unable to speak.
Pick up the phone,
Don says. I do. The figure opposite does the same.
Hello, Mum,
he says. Chapter 59. Friday the 12th of September, 2014. The Reporter. Jake can't speak either now. We stare at each other. Here we are, sitting across from each other. He is so still it looks like he's been carved on the top of a tomb. But it's him. Jake, I whisper above the angry buzz of voices around me. And his head moves a tiny flicker. He puts one hand up to his face, covering it so that he looks as if he's peering through a crack in a wall, not quite in the room.
I can't believe you've come,
he says. Don reaches across to poke me. All he can hear is my end of the non-conversation.
You've got his name wrong, you bloody amateur,
he explodes.
It's Jamie. Now ask a question for fuck's sake. We haven't come here just to look at him.
I try to say something, but my throat is so constricted, I can only squeak. Don grabs the phone from me and starts in.
Hello, Jamie. Sorry about that. My friend is a bit jet-lagged.
How are you doing? We're reporters, and we've come to see you to talk about Mama's guest house.
I make a grab for the phone, startling poor Don into letting go. Jake, I say,
what are you doing in here?
Don's face is a picture.
It's my son, I tell him. It's Jake.
My boy and I talk slowly, feeling our way through the minefield of questions that need answering. I clutch the phone, as I have done before, thousands of miles away, to hear every word. Don sits with his head next to mine so he can hear as well, making notes and occasionally interrupting with a follow-up question. Jake tells us that his passport was stolen by Jamie and replaced with his. He doesn't know why. He only realized when he was arrested in a bar near the guest house. The police searched his backpack and found Jamie's passport and a small bag of cannabis.
It was a setup, Mum. Someone had told the police where to find me. They came straight to my table. They planted the drugs on me. I didn't understand what they were saying. They were shouting, and they looked at my documents and just assumed I was Jamie Lawrence. I didn't tell them my real name because I thought I could sort it out and no one would ever need to know I'd been arrested.
Us, he means. He didn't want us to know. His judgmental family.
Has there been a hearing?
Don asks.
No, I'm on remand.
Why didn't you get a message to us, Jake? I say. He sighs into the phone.
I'm sorry, Mum. I was going to, but...
You see, you told us you were in Phuket, saving wildlife or something. We haven't really known where you were for 2 years.
Mum,
he says, and I stop. Sorry. I didn't mean to interrogate you. That is for later, I think. It's just such a shock finding you here. We are back at the beginning.
So why did you come then, Mum? What did you want to ask Jamie about?
The fire at the guest house, I say. He jerks his head up.
What fire? When?
The night after you were arrested.
Didn't you know?
He shakes his head.
None of the guards speak English. I don't hear any news in here.
Two girls staying there were killed.
Two?
He shouts, his hand going back up to his face.
Oh, God! Alex!
Why isn't he mentioning Rosie? Don looks at me. He knows there's something off about Jake's reaction, too. I shake my head and mouth shock at him. I know it must be distressing, love, I say, ramming the explanation home, for my own sake as much as Don's. The police are investigating, here and at home. They're saying Alex was murdered. Jake. She was strangled before the place was set on fire. His face has collapsed, and he is crying. I put my hand to the grill. It's as close as I can get to touching him. Don't cry, Angel, I say. It's the first time I've said those words since he was a toddler. And I start to cry too.
Who do you think killed her, Jake?
Don asks.
Was anyone being weird around her? Paying her too much attention?
My son tries to steady his breathing.
We joked that Jamie was Alex's stalker,
he says, his voice raspy and flat, as if all the life has been knocked out of him.
He was trying to get her to go to Koh Phi Phi with him after Rosie.
He stops. After Rosie what? I say.
I'm trying to remember,
he says, his voice unsteady.
Rosie took off the day before I was picked up. She told Mama she was going to Myanmar with some Dutch boys. Jamie was so happy. He thought he would have Alex to himself.
Dutch boys, I say. Do you mean Lars and Diederik?
Yes. How do you know their names?
He raises his head and looks at me hard. I've talked to Lars, Jake. I've been covering the story, I say. And I look into his eyes to see if he's lying. When he was little, I could always tell. He'd look away first, or down at his shoes if he was fibbing.
Freddy did it.
As he got older and the lies became more subtle, it got harder. I tried to ring, but my phone ran out of credit. But I could still spot the fake sincerity in his voice.
Honest, Mum.
If I was fronting him up, if he was a story, I'd come straight in with, Rosie didn't go to Myanmar with the Dutch boys. We know that, don't we? But I don't know what he'll say. I don't want him to lie to me. I'm not ready for that. Don says,
She never left the guest house. She was the other body.
It's been a huge story, I interrupt. Your face has been on the front of every newspaper in the UK since the fire. The police are looking for you in connection with the deaths, Jake. You are in a world of trouble.
Oh, God! But why aren't they looking for Jamie?
Because as far as they're concerned, he's in prison in Bangkok. His head goes down again.
We will get you out of here, I say.
I have no idea how, but I have to give him hope.
Okay,
he says.
Hang on in there, Don says. We need to sort out a lawyer immediately. I know one who might be able to help. Then we'll talk to the police about your real identity, okay?
Jake nods. He doesn't look at me. The bell rings and we start our goodbyes. I'll come tomorrow, I say. I've sent some food. KFC, I add hopelessly. He's been hustled out of his seat to make way for the next prisoner.
I love you, Jake,
I shout through the grill. But he makes no sign he's heard me. Chapter 60. Friday the 12th of September, 2014. The Reporter. Don and I wait until we are outside before we speak. Can we get him out? I say. It's all that matters now. I can deal with everything else later, whatever that is.
Let's see, Don says. I'll ring my bloke, and we need to get the British Embassy involved. It's a case of mistaken identity, and we can prove who he is. It's a start, and if we were on home soil, I'd be optimistic, but we're not in Kansas anymore.
While he rings his man, I ring mine.
Steve, I found Jake,
I blurt.
Have you?
His voice is suddenly loud, spilling out of the phone.
Has he rung you? Where is he? How is he? Can I speak to him?
Steve, he's here. In Bangkok. There is a beat of stunned silence as my husband wrestles with the news.
What?
He shouts.
What is happening?
And I explain slowly. I'm picking the knots in the story for myself, as well as my traumatized husband. It's Don who spots Bob Sparks and Sarah Salmond in the visitors' queue.
They must be going in to see Jamie Lawrence,
he says when I try to duck behind a pillar.
We need to tell them what's happened. They may be able to help spring Jake.
I'm still not sure, but I cross my fingers.
Inspector!
Don calls across, and I try to smile. Bob looks supremely fed up when he sees us. He doesn't smile back, just rakes his hair with his fingers, leaving sweaty cornrows.
Have you been in?
He snaps.
I should have guessed that's where you were going.
I try to look apologetic. I need him on side.
We have, Bob,
I say, but I'm suddenly fighting back tears. I clench my fists against them, try to straighten my face.
Kate, what's the matter? What's happened?
He asks. It's Jake, I gulp.
What about him? Has Jamie told you something?
I shake my head and Don carries on for me, filing the story in three sentences.
It's Jake Waters they've got in there, not Jamie Lawrence. Jake says he was stitched up by him. His passport was swapped and drugs planted on him, so he was arrested.
Bloody hell, D.S. Salmon says. So who's been driving round Surrey in the hire car?
D.I. Sparks looks up at the sky and then at me.
Are you sure it's him?
He's my son. Of course I'm sure.
I'm assuming you weren't sitting face to face and you haven't seen him for a while. I'm just saying that people can make mistakes.
It's him! I shout.
And what did he say? What did he tell you?
I blow my nose on a tissue D.S. Salmond has handed me as the queue turns and watches us with naked curiosity before shuffling forward a few steps.
He said, when they first started calling him Jamie, he thought it was a good thing. That he could sort it out and no one need know he'd been in trouble. He's an idiot, Bob. But he was not involved in that fire. He didn't even know about it until I told him. He was inside Klong Prem, sleeping on the floor of a cell with 70 other prisoners.
Sparks doesn't want to hear Jake's sob story and waves the details away with his hand.
What about the girls? Does he know what happened to them?
He said Rosie left before the fire, to go to Myanmar.
With the Dutch boys,
Don adds quietly. Bob Sparks raises an eyebrow.
Except, of course, she didn't.
He was told that by the woman who owned the guest house, Mama. Have you talked to her yet?
and I hurry on past the questions about Jake to Jamie.
Jake says Jamie was a strange lad who followed Alex around and was trying to pressure her into travelling with him instead of Rosie.
Does he think Jamie killed them?
He doesn't know. But he said Jamie was very happy when Rosie disappeared.
Salmon got her notebook out.
So she disappeared on August the 13th?
She asks, pen poised.
I think that's right. It was difficult to talk through two grills with everyone else shouting around us.
I imagine it was,
Spark says.
I need to talk to Jake myself. He's a person of interest in our investigation until we rule him out, and I need to be absolutely clear about his identity myself before I contact the Thai police and my lot.
I'm not sure prisoners can have more than one visit a day, I say. I'm not sure I want my son interrogated by D.I. Bob Sparks.
They've got a million rules.
Leave that with us. Zara's made a friend in the prison service, and they've smoothed our way. Now tell me some family secrets I can test Jake with.
I run through Pet's names, Jake's school, teacher's names, his A-level results, his first girlfriend. But all the time I keep running our conversation in the prison through my head.
Two, he'd shouted, as if he was expecting only one body. He hadn't known about Alex, but Rosie. What will he tell Bob Sparks?
What are you going to do with this, Kate?
Bob is asking.
Are you telling your newspaper?
For a moment, I feel as if I don't know. But I do. If I don't do it, Don will.
Yes, of course I am. I need to get him released. Don's getting him a lawyer, and I'm going straight to the embassy to tell them. They've got the wrong person in prison. That must count for something with the Thai authorities.
Right, well, good luck with that,
Spark says.
I'd better give our press office the heads up. What time is it there?
Early yet, sir, Salmon says.
But I'm not confirming your story, Kate. Not until I've seen him, and I'm sure.
Be gentle with him, Bob, I say. He's been through hell.
Chapter 61. Friday, the 12th of September, 2014. The detective. When he came out, Sparks was re-energized. It was Jake Waters. They were doing a blood test in the prison infirmary to set the seal on it, but it was definitely him. Come on, Zara, keep up, he said, striding back to the taxi rank and turning his phone on again. We need to tell HQ immediately and put Jamie Lawrence's photo out officially. I'm pretty sure that Kate Waters has released the story, sir. I've got loads of missed calls.
Yeah, me too.
There was one from Eileen, but Sparks was dialing DCI Wellington as he got into the taxi. He would ring Eileen as soon as he'd got rid of the business end. He couldn't wait to tell her the latest twist in the tale. She'd love it. He talked to his boss in short bursts as they careered through the traffic. She knew everything already. The Post had been onto them before publishing Kate's account while he was inside the prison, but she'd fended off inquiries until she could speak to him.
Say that blood tests are being done to confirm the identity of the man in Bangkok, Sparks said. Why haven't we got Jake Waters' DNA results to compare with the DNA from Rosie's body? We need to put a rocket under the lab, boys, and, most importantly, put out the message that we want to talk to Jamie Lawrence urgently. The Post has got his photo from the Dutch boy, Lars. Let's get it blown up and out there.
Up in his room, he took off his sweat-sodden shirt and stood under the air-conditioning unit to dry off. He felt as if his brain was boiling inside his skull. He sat on the bed with a towel round his shoulders and rang Eileen back. Sam answered the home phone.
"Hello, love," he said, still buzzing. "I've missed a call from Mum. Put her on. She won't believe what's happened here."
"I can't, Dad. She's not well."
The towel slipped off as he braced himself against what was coming.
What's happened? She lost consciousness in the night. I'm so sorry, Dad. Can you come home?
He was fighting one arm into the sleeve of his damp shirt already, adrenaline coursing through his body.
I'm coming. What's the doctor saying, Sam?
His daughter's voice faltered. She was being so brave it broke his heart.
That it could be a matter of hours, Dad.
He wouldn't be there. He knew that. Were you with her, love?
No. Helen was. She just slipped into a coma during the night, and Helen rang me as soon as she realized. Why did you go to Bangkok, Dad? Why aren't you here?
He couldn't speak for a moment. The guilt and grief flooded his head, washing out every other thought.
Dad? Are you there?
Sam's voice was his life belt, dragging him back to shore. I'll find out about a flight now, love. Kiss your mum for me. Tell her to hold on until I'm there. Tell her I love her. Oh, Christ, he told his knees when it was over. He found himself on the carpet. Had he fainted? He didn't want to get up. He wanted to lie there, but someone was knocking on the door. He struggled to his feet and opened it a crack.
Bob, are you okay? Kate said. You look terrible.
He let her in. He didn't have the strength to do anything else. She led him to a chair and helped him put his arm in the other sleeve of his shirt.
It's freezing in here, Bob. You're shivering. I'll turn the AC down.
I need to get home, he said. I need to get a flight.
Why? Oh, God, is it Eileen? I'll call the airline for you now. Where's your ticket and passport?
He fished them out of his jacket pocket without a word. The ticket was limp with the morning's perspiration, but Kate took it and sat on the bed with her phone. He watched her as she tried to persuade the airline to change the flight. This is what she looks like when she's working me.
Bob,
Kate said, her hand over the phone. They want to know what sort of emergency it is. We need to say, or you'll have to buy another ticket. It will cost a fortune. You're on a cheapo fare. Eileen's dying, he said. And Kate's eyes widened.
My friend's wife is dying from cancer. He has to get home tonight,
he heard her say.
Is that the earliest flight? Nothing else? What about other airlines?
She was all business as she finally got off the phone.
Okay, the next direct flight to London leaves at midnight. There are connecting flights that leave a bit earlier, but they take much longer, and there is the risk of missing your connection. So I've changed your ticket to the midnight flight. With the time difference, you'll be in London at 6:30 tomorrow morning.
He nodded.
It was hopeless. He wouldn't get there in time.
His head dropped, and Kate took his hand.
We'll leave for the airport in 4 hours, Bob. Do you want me to tell dear Salmon?
No. I'll do it.
I'll get you a brandy, she said, and rummaged in the minibar. I think I'll have one, too.
Salmon came immediately.
Oh, God, sir, I'm so sorry. What can I do?
Nothing, Zara, he said. Kate sorted out the flight. But I want you to stay and finish off here.
Of course. It'll be all right. You'll get there.
Kate passed her another miniature and ripped the plastic bag off the tooth mug in the bathroom. They all sat in silence, sipping their drinks, each in their own bubble. Reality punctured the silence when Salmon's phone went off.
It's DCI Wellington, she said,
and passed the phone to Sparks. The two women retreated into the bathroom to give him some privacy while he told his boss his news. Zara, he called after he'd finished, you need to speak to the DCI and update her on what's going on, re Jamie Lawrence.
Are you going to be all right, sir? She said,
and he nodded.
I'll stay, Kate said, and I'll take him to the airport. You get on with the investigation.
Bangkok, day 19. Thursday, the 14th of August, 2014. She hadn't seen Jake for hours. He told her he'd be back soon. He'd been all distracted, but he'd stroked her hair as he left. She held on to that. She didn't understand what was going on. She hated it when boys did that, messed with your head. 1 minute really into you, the next, so not interested. Anyway, she had other things to think about. But her mind kept straying back to Jake and the lovely dip above his top lip. And Rosie, She took a deep breath and read through her new to-do list again, stumbling at every line. Find Rosie. Phone Mum. Go home. She got her ticket out and laid it on the bed beside A&R's final itinerary. She and Rosie hadn't moved past page one, but she leafed through the rest of the trip, picking out highlights she'd never see now. Tears fell onto the pages, blotting the damp paper, smudging the details of their adventure. The reality was so grubby and sleazy. She went to screw the pages up and throw them across the room, but stopped herself. She needed the airline phone number. She was sure she'd copied and pasted it into the itinerary, and found it in a list of useful contacts. Just above Rosie's mobile phone number, Alex grabbed her new phone and dialed. The phone went straight to voicemail. Rosie's chirpy voice filled her head. Hi, too busy having a great time to take your call. Send me a text or email if you need me. She begged Rosie to get in touch. Please, we can sort things out. I haven't said anything to our parents yet, but I'll have to soon. Ring me, Rosie. She sat for a while with her phone in her hand. Was Rosie screening her calls? She'd text her as well, to ram the message home. Then she'd go and see Mama. Mama glared at Alex as she approached. I need to know why Rosie left, Mama, Alex said. It's very important. The landlady's mouth clamped shut, her purple lipstick almost disappearing. I'll have to go to the police and report her missing if you don't tell me. Alex tried to keep her voice strong. The purple lips reappeared in a ghastly smile. That would be a mistake, Mama said. That is why Rosie went. And she told Alex about Rosie crying because she was so ashamed of herself, about begging Mama to lend her money and get her passport back from the scooter man. She wanted to run away from all this and from you. Mama pointed at Alex. Why me? You hated her. We all heard you. Then she shook her head. You and Rosie are big trouble. Alex stood her ground in front of Mama's desk. Please show me the text messages she sent. I need to see them. Mama slid her phone off the desk into her pocket. Private, she said. Alex stood silently. Grim-faced. What? What else? Mama said. I am too busy for this. She reached up to scratch her scalp, and Alex noticed she was wearing her missing earrings. Where did you get those? She snapped, pointing at the girlish flower head studs. And Mama put a hand to an earlobe. Rosie, she said and half-smiled. They were a goodbye present. Now go away. Mama waved her off. Was Rosie sleeping with Jake? Alex blurted. The question had been burning a hole in her stomach. Mama's eyes narrowed. Who told you that? Jamie. He told me to ask you. You are a bad girl, making trouble for Mama's guest house. Where is Jake? Alex's voice was suddenly louder. Did he have anything to do with Rosie leaving? Not your business, Mama snapped. I want you to leave now. I need your room. Alex couldn't settle anywhere. She paced the corridor from her room to the dorm, then back again. She wouldn't talk to Jamie beyond asking where Jake was. When is he getting back? Jamie repeated he had no idea, irritation making his voice more clipped, his breath shorter. Alex watched him. When he thought she'd gone, she could see he was counting slowly with his eyes closed, like a child playing hide-and-seek. When he opened them, he looked startled to see her so close. What? He said. She carried on staring. Nothing. Do you think Jake is avoiding me? I really want to talk to him before I go home. Stop talking about going home. We can sort this out. I can have a word with Mama, if you like. No, I'll ask Jake to do it when I see him. He's worked here for ages. He knows Mama best. I can't believe you want anything to do with him after what he did. You don't know what he did, Jamie. You're just making it up. Well, I know what I saw and heard. What? What did you hear? Rosie shouting at Jake, saying she would tell you about sleeping with him.
Shut up!
Alex shrieked. If you don't want to believe me, that's your problem. Alex turned away. I'm going to see if I can find him. I'll come too, Jamie said. You shouldn't be on your own. She wouldn't walk with him, so he trailed behind her. They went to all the usual places, but Alex noticed that he didn't really bother looking. When they got back, Alex checked her phone again for a message from Rosie. Nothing. She phoned the airline to find out about changing her ticket. There were seats, but it was going to be expensive. She'd have to ask her parents to do it, and to pay the extra cost, when she rang them. I'm hoping I can get a flight home tomorrow, she told Jamie when she ventured back into the empty bar. He looked stunned. But we were going to talk to Mama about you staying. No, we weren't, Jamie. You were. I don't want you to. Even if Rosie comes back, how can I trust her again? I'm going to ring home and tell them and then get on the plane. I'm sorry, but I've got to leave. You'll be fine. She went to put her arm around him, but she didn't want him to get the wrong idea. I won't, he said, his voice muffled by emotion. I want you to stay, Alex. Please stay with me. She pulled back and straightened her crumpled shirt. No, that's not going to happen. He looked like he might cry. Look, I'm going to start packing. Maybe we can have a drink together later? A bit of a party, Jamie said. Well, maybe, she said, doubtfully.
Chapter 62. Friday the 12th of September, 2014. The Reporter. Do you want me to leave you alone? I ask, not wanting to go. He looks smaller, somehow, diminished by the pain.
No, I could do with some company, he says. Even a hack.
He tries to smile. Ever the charmer? I smile back, trying to keep the gentle joshing going. It's what we do when things are blacker than black. We make a joke. A bad one. It's bravura, I suppose. Showing we can laugh in the face of anything. Shall I pack your bag?
Thanks, Kate. Is there another brandy in the minibar?
I fish them all out and lay them on the carpet in front of him. No brandy, but there's whiskey or gin. Or a beer? I leave him choosing and start emptying his drawers into his suitcase. I'm surprised he's had time to unpack. Most blokes don't bother. But his underwear and socks are neatly sorted, and his shirts are hanging in the wardrobe. Looks like you were planning to stay for a month, Bob, I say. Not a light packer, then.
I couldn't concentrate when I was getting ready, so I put everything in. I shouldn't have come, should I?
I go and sit on the bed opposite him and automatically stroke his arm. I can't help it. It's muscle memory for this sort of situation. But it makes me prickle with embarrassment, and I go to pull my hand back. But he doesn't recoil. He takes my hand and squeezes it.
Thanks for being here, Kate. I appreciate it.
Why don't you FaceTime Sam, I say. Then you can see Eileen for yourself. Speak to her. He puts on a clean shirt, turning away from me as he takes off the old one. The skin on his back is still damp, and the fabric clings immediately. I find my phone tripod in my bag and set it up on the desk. It'll be easier than trying to hold the phone in shaking hands. I'll go in the bathroom, shall I?
No, stay. I might balls the FaceTime thing up and need you.
He rings his daughter, and I catch a glimpse of her on the screen, puffy eyes and Bob's mouth.
Can I see Mum?
He says. I can see the strain in his face in the mirror above the desk as he searches for her.
Hello, love,
he says when Sam arrives at the bedside. The figure in the bed stirs at the sound.
I'm here, love,
he breathes.
I know you can hear me, Eileen. I want you to know how much I love you, and that I'll be there in person in the morning. You promised you'd be all right until I got back. Will you wait for me? Please, love.
He's crying and I try not to look. But I catch myself glancing at the tragedy in the mirror.
Move the phone, Sam, so I can see all of her.
Sam runs the phone over her mother, starting at her sleeping face, as white as the pillowcase, and moving over her curled hands on a rosebud duvet cover.
We're all here,
Sam says, panning round to show the others, looking shyly into the camera.
And we'll all be here when you get back, Dad.
All right, darling. See you in the morning,
he says. I make him get into bed and rest afterwards. He's exhausted, and he closes his eyes straight away, lying on his side with his hands held together under the pillow. I turn the main light off and sit quietly until I think he may be asleep. Then I tiptoe into the bathroom and make my own call home.
Chapter 63. Friday, the 12th of September, 2014. The Mother. She switched on the kitchen television as she made the second tea of the day, standing in her nightie and old cardigan, turning up the sound a bit so she could hear above the kettle's rumble. Their family liaison officer, D.C. Wendy Turner, had rung at the crack of dawn with the news that there'd been a major breakthrough. Leslie, Jake Waters has been found in Bangkok. He's in prison.
What? As well as Jamie Lawrence? Leslie had said, trying to make sense of the words through the fog of sleep.
No, the police thought it was Jamie Lawrence, but it was really Jake Waters.
I don't understand, Wendy. What do you mean?
She thought she'd got it straight by the time she put the phone down and turned to Malcolm.
They're not looking for Jake Waters anymore, she'd said. He's in prison in Bangkok. It's Jamie Lawrence they want to talk to now. It's him they think killed Alex.
The Scottish referendum build-up was playing in the background as she stirred Malcolm's sugar in. As she lifted both cups to take them upstairs, Alex's face appeared on the screen. She slopped both back onto the counter in her haste to get to the remote control. It was suddenly blaring into the room, the astonishing development in the backpacker murder.
Mal! She screamed. Come down here, it's Alex!
Malcolm ran down the stairs in his T-shirt and boxers, his face creased with sleep.
Look, she said, pointing at the screen. The press have heard they've got Jake Waters.
Malcolm sat down on a chair and rubbed his eyes.
Can we turn the telly down? He said. I've got a terrible headache.
Leslie muted it and rang Wendy Turner's mobile. Voicemail. But as soon as she put the phone down, Jenny called.
It's doing my head in, Leslie, she said. It's awful. Just when I think I know what happened, everything gets thrown up in the air again. I just want to know who killed our girls, that's all. I've tried Wendy again just now, but her phone went straight to voicemail. There's no one else I can ring for information. D.I. Sparks and D.S. Salmon are in Thailand. I don't know how to get hold of them. Ring Kate Waters, she'll know.
Kate's mobile number rang out, and Leslie tried to sit still. Hello, Leslie, Kate answered. Have you heard? There was no call for pleasantries now. Mother shorthand was all that was needed.
Yes, it's unbelievable. Do you know what happened?
I went to see Jamie Lawrence earlier and found Jake in the prison.
But how was this mistake made? Do they look the same?
A bit, same height and hair colour. But Jamie's passport was in Jake's bag. And Jake went along with it, told the police he was Jamie. He didn't want us to know he'd been arrested. And the police didn't question it. He was just a skinny foreigner with a small bag of cannabis in his backpack. I don't think they were too interested in checking his ID. They just locked him up.
And it was Jamie in the hospital?
Yes, with Jake's passport. And Jamie at the hospital when the fire started. Jake had nothing to do with that, Leslie. There was silence as both women re-ran the last shouted phone call in their heads.
I'm sorry I said those things, Kate. I was so desperately upset.
I know. It was a terrible time for all of us. But the police will catch Jamie. Now they're looking for the right man.
What are they doing? Are you with D.I. Sparks and D.S. Salmond?
Kate went quiet again. Then she whispered down the phone. Look, Bob Sparks has got a family emergency. He's flying back tonight. Zara Salmond is finishing things up here. Give her a ring in an hour or so.
Oh, goodness, what's happened?
It's personal, Leslie. I'm not sure Bob would like people to know. Is that okay?
Of course. What did Jake say about the girls, Kate?
He didn't even know they were dead. He was very upset when I told him about Alex. I think he liked her a lot. Leslie started to cry. She felt as if she was standing on a precipice in the dark, the stress of not knowing what would happen next crowding her head with what-ifs. She couldn't see an end to it. She couldn't bear to even try to step forward any more. "Try and stay strong, Leslie," Kate was saying. "I'm going back with a lawyer to see him again, to try to get him out. He'll be able to tell us more then."
"Will you call me afterwards?" Leslie asked. "Please."
Chapter 64. Monday, the 15th of September, 2014. The Reporter. I still haven't heard from Don, and I drum my fingers on the hotel desk. He's been busy all weekend with me snapping at his heels, urging him on. He's got the lawyer on board, and we've talked endlessly to the embassy, the police, and the press. Give him another 5 minutes, I tell myself. He's probably on the phone to the lawyer again. We're taking him in to see Jake later this morning. I look at my phone like a junkie, automatically checking every 30 seconds for messages or emails. Bob sent a simple text yesterday to tell me Eileen had died. He didn't say if he'd got there in time. I hope he did. I'd waited for a long time after he headed off to catch his flight on Friday. I'd just stood there, weighed down by his quiet grief. He hadn't cried again. He'd stitched it under his damp skin, holding it in until he reached home.
"Thanks, Kate,"
he'd said, as he shouldered his bag and put his passport in his breast pocket.
"Better go through. Security can take an age."
I'd wanted to hug him, but he looked too brittle to touch. "Have a safe trip, Bob. Try and sleep. You'll be there sooner if you do." He tried to smile. "Go on. There's a car booked to pick you up at the airport."
"Okay. Goodbye."
He'd reached out a hand and stroked my arm, then turned and disappeared into the throng. I'd taken the train back into the city. After so much intensity, I couldn't bear the isolation of a taxi cab. I needed people around me, even strangers. Especially strangers. I watched their faces, writing their stories in my head. It was very late when I got to my room and switched on my laptop. Jake's face was everywhere again. But this time, he was the victim, not the perpetrator. The wrong man. The press had had a field day, berating the Thai police over the mistakes they'd identified. 10 reasons they got it wrong, the devastating mistakes in full, etc. It's a complicated story, but the editors had pulled out all the stops, adding value, the watchword on backbenches, so there were sidebars, bullet points and graphics to hammer home every line. It looked amazing, but I'd wondered if it would do any good. Would it shame the Thais into releasing Jake? I should have gone straight to bed when I got back to the hotel, but I poured myself a glass of Chateau Minibar and kept replaying Jake in my head. The moment we recognised each other. His reaction to the news about Alex. Rosie. I'd ask him more when we got him out. He doesn't look any more rested when we see him today, but then neither do I. All the plates are spinning now. The embassy is attempting to work its diplomatic magic behind the scenes, and the lawyer is doing all the talking at the prison. I have to wait my turn. When the lawyer and Don go off to talk to the prison authorities, I lean forward. "Did you sleep last night?" I say. He shakes his head. His eyes are pouchy, and the bristles on his face make him look old. "Did you get the food I sent?" He nods. "We need to talk, Jake."
"When I get out, Mum. My head is all over the place. I'm trying to make sense of it all."
"We all are," I say, "especially about Rosie. Do you know what happened to her?" He shakes his head slowly. "The police are going to ask you the same questions. You do know that?"
"The inspector already has," and I told him the same thing. I don't know. She disappeared the night Alex got drunk and had to be put to bed. I was supposed to be taking Alex out for something to eat, but I ended up doing an extra shift. I was told Rosie'd gone to Myanmar on the bus to meet the Dutch boys.
He rattles it off, this neat little tale, and I shiver.
Did you believe that? I say gently. Jake looks across No Man's Land at me.
Why are you asking that? What was I supposed to think? It was possible.
Who told you?
Mama, the woman who ran the guest house. She's the person the police should be talking to.
And Alex?
She was alive when I left the guest house for the last time. Honest, Mum. She was talking about going home. It was a horrible mess.
The bell clangs, and he looks up. I can see the relief on his face that he can leave.
Stay strong, love,
I call, and put my hand up to the grill. He nods and stumbles away. Ross is nervous when we finally meet. Jittery. Slopping his drink onto the table as he jumps up to greet me. He'd blown me out the last time, and I'd wondered if he'd turn up today.
Hi.
He pulls out a chair for me, and I catch it before it tumbles to the ground.
Watch out,
I say. Are you okay?
Yeah. Sorry, I'm all over the place. I'm trying to get clean. It's only been a few days.
That's great, Ross, I say, and smile encouragingly.
I had some bad stuff the other day and ended up in hospital. Anyway, I'm trying.
He signals to a waiter for another coffee.
So, do you think you'll be able to get Jake out of prison? Is he okay?
I've just seen him. It's unbelievably grim. But we're working on getting the ties to release him. Ross nods and holds up crossed fingers, like he's five and we're playing a game. When do boys grow up? Probably only when they have children of their own, I think, stirring my coffee. When they finally get the whole being an adult thing. Ross is looking edgy.
I'd better get off to the pharmacy, he says. Pick up some stuff.
Absolutely. Look, just one thing. Jake said I should speak to Mama, the woman who owned the guest house, but I don't know where to find her. Have you seen her lately? Ross looks at me sideways.
Well, not seen her, but I heard from someone that she turned up at a cousin's place. She's staying there for a while.
I'd love to talk to her about Jake. Can you give me the address?
She might not want to talk to you.
I promise not to say you gave it to me. He writes it down on a paper napkin with my pen. The woman sitting outside the house on an orange plastic chair is in what looks like full stage makeup and wig, wafting her face with a bamboo fan.
Hello,
I say. You must be Mama. She curls a lip, but stays seated.
Who are you? What do you want?
I'm Kate. I've been to your guest house. It's not a lie. I have. I've stood in the ruins. She shrugs and rolls her eyes at another woman sitting beside her. A small drab peahen beside her own flamboyant display.
I don't remember you. But so many people stayed.
I just wanted to say how sorry I was to hear about the fire. It must be terrible for you to lose everything like that. Mama looks interested for the first time and waves her companion out of her seat for me.
Yes, it is terrible. I lost my home, my business, my money.
I tut sympathetically, and the cousin is sent off in search of cool drinks.
Were you at home when it started?
She nods.
Sleeping in my bed, I woke up and smelled the smoke.
She mimes the moment she realized.
Wow, how did you get out? I climbed out of a window. I broke my arm when I fell.
And she lifts the sleeve of her dress to show me a grubby cast.
I went back to my home village to recover. But I had to come back to Bangkok to sort things out.
You are so lucky to get out alive, I say, laying the sympathy on with a trowel. She was there. At last I'm talking to someone who was actually there.
Very lucky.
How on earth did it start? I ask.
I heard it was a candle knocked over at a party. The eyes narrow.
That's what the police say. But there was no party. One of the English boys did it,
she says, and fans herself for dramatic effect.
I am the perfect audience.
I sit forward and gasp with disbelief.
How do you know? I saw him running away. I smelled the lighter fluid he used.
She spits on the pavement in disgust.
Jamie. Jamie always in the way. Those poor girls,
I say, and Mama's face hardens behind the makeup.
I heard one of them, Rosie Shaw, had left to go travelling in Myanmar. That is what she told me.
Did she?
The last time I see her, the night before the fire.
Oh, I say carefully. I thought she was supposed to have left 2 days before. Mama fans herself rapidly.
Yes, yes, that is correct. 2 days before. I can't remember everything.
You must have been a good friend to her. I heard she sent you text messages.
Well, the English boy, Jamie, said to tell people that. People were getting upset about her disappearing. He said it would make them happier.
Jamie?
Yes. He was always whispering in my ear, telling tales. He said he saw everything.
Mama says, almost to herself. Did he? What did he see?
He was always watching Alex. He wanted her more than anything. He even drugged her once to stop her going out with Jake.
Really? I can't believe what I'm hearing.
Yes, he put something in her beer and then put her to bed, safe away from everyone else.
Mama's cousin suddenly interrupts us, coming out of the door with a phone. She waves it at Mama, who excuses herself.
Sorry, this is important.
I sit with the cup of water warming in my hands and wait. Rosie never left. Jamie made up the text messages. Did Alex find out? Was that why she was killed? When she returns, Mama is furious.
Who are you?
She hisses from the doorway.
I told you.
Kate.
You're British police. My contact told me.
No, of course I'm not. You're right, the British police are in Bangkok, looking into the death of the two girls. But I'm not with them. I'm the mother of Jake Waters. She actually laughs. A deep, dirty rumble.
I am glad. I'm not,
she says, and closes the door on me. It takes the rest of the day for the results of Jake's blood test to come back, confirming the mistaken identity, and for the ties to release him. I spend much of it in taxis, running round the city collecting and delivering pieces of paper, phoning home to get Steve to scan documents, or Joe to find a number. I'll thank him properly when I get back. With Jake. In the end, his release is done very quietly, without fuss or any admission of blame. The Thai way. I stand and wait while Jake is brought through. The heavy clunk of slamming doors marking his passage towards me. I've got the emergency passport, plane tickets, and my luggage with me. Don and the lawyer thought it best to leave immediately, before anything else could happen. I hold his hand in the taxi, and he presses back.
Nearly home,
I whisper.
Dad and Freddy will be at the airport to meet us.
Chapter 65. Tuesday, the 16th of September, 2014. The reporter. They are not the only ones. The arrivals hall is rammed with film crews and reporters. I should have expected it, but I'm not firing on all cylinders. I spot Steve at the back of the throng, waving frantically, and push our trolley as fast as I can towards him, with Jake hanging on to the handle like a toddler in Sainsbury's. But it's like swimming against the tide. The reporters crowd in, ducking under the photographer's lenses, blocking our way and firing their questions at us.
How does it feel to be home, Jake?
Are you suing the Thai authorities?
What's the first thing you're going to do?
Have a pint of beer and then sleep for a week,
my son says, and smiles his beautiful smile. The cameras beep and whir to capture the moment of homecoming. Then we move forward like a rugby scrum, the reporters still keeping their heads below the lenses and walking backwards as we edge forwards. Steve is wading through the crowd to meet us. He finally breaks through and folds Jake into his grasp and holds him long and hard.
"You're a wonderful sight," he says,
and then hugs me too.
"Still ugly,"
Freddy says, and man-bumps his brother.
"Come on, let's get you home."
Steve takes his eldest son by the arm.
"Do you want to say anything to the parents of Alex and Rosie?"
A familiar voice shouts over the hubbub. Jake stops smiling. I grip his arm to stop him, but he is searching for the source of the question.
"That I am so sorry."
"Sorry about what?"
Louise Butler calls back.
"Sorry that they died."
"Do you know how Rosie died, Jake?"
He looks stunned by the sudden change of tone, and Steve and I hustle him forward, away from the questions. Joe Jackson appears at my side.
"Can we get a few words on our own, Kate, an exclusive interview? I can come to the house."
"Bring me in an hour," I hiss. "We need to get him home."
Chapter 66. Thursday, the 18th of September, 2014. The Detective. Bob was putting on his socks, sitting on the unused side of the bed. The others were waiting downstairs, and he knew he should hurry, but he needed 5 minutes with Eileen. All the talking had been done, the endless cups of tea, the poring over photo albums, and the remembering. The ritual of loss had been observed in every detail, but he ached to be alone with his wife, to hear what she had to say about it all. He closed his eyes and summoned her, as she'd been last Christmas, before it came back. She'd presided over the kitchen like a battle general, cursing the roast potatoes that wouldn't crisp up, and whisking the lumps out of her legendary, terrible gravy. And she'd smiled in the middle of the chaos. "Well, this was worth getting better for, wasn't it?" It had been. Every minute had been worth it.